Would you like to have a date?
Yeah, just, what are you looking at?
Okay.
On the front page.
Oh, it's the same thing, it's the...
We need to know what that is, just tell us what it is.
It's the source water protection plan for the Milford Springs.
Okay.
It's the what water protection?
Source.
Source water protection plan for the Milford Springs.
Right, so the source water protection plan for Milford Springs says in it that there was a bromide study done, and the bromide studies confirmed that there was a connection between the springs and Sock Hill. That's what the study, that's what that report says. And so I read that report, in the references for that report, there's a bunch of other reports referenced. They reference in that report, the 1968 report by Baker. It referenced the study that Todd Gidding did on the gravel pit.
Yeah.
It referenced his bromide study that was done. I don't recall if it mentions the oxygen study, but I think it does. And so what I did is I specifically asked for the Water Authority for copies of those original studies so I could look at the original work that was the foundation for that study.
And?
And I disagree with only one thing. The one thing I disagree with is the bromide study done by Todd Giddings, by Dr. Don Giddings, doesn't show that there's a connection between Sock Hill and your springs. The data doesn't show that at all. That's all.
So he's a licensed geologist and he's incorrect?
Yes, in my professional opinion, the interpretation of the data for that effect is incorrect.
Okay, so then let's go to 1997 with the mining. Do you know
what the mining?
The mining data that was in 1997, where there was a rainfall and the turbidity came down into the springs. We're talking on the same thing. Are you aware of that?
Yes, that was okay. Part of it.
Yeah. When you testified last time,
would you mind if we can identify that again for the record?
It's 1997.
Is that called an evaluation of the FAW Associates gravel?
You talked over you. Go ahead.
An evaluation of the FAW Associates gravel pit, Milford Township, Pike County, Pennsylvania, March 1997. Is that the report you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, in your testimony last time, you said you didn't know exactly where that was. Do you know exactly where the mining pit is?
Based on the aerial map, yes.
And where is it?
It's more than a map. I don't have a map to show you.
I have a map.
No, we're going to go into the same issue we had earlier.
Well, even in that other map, I could show him. The map that you show the flow. I can show.
So
go back to the flow map and I'll show them exactly where it is.
Identify the document you're asking me to look at, please.
So the flow map.
It would be the inferred groundwater flow directions from Exhibit A24.
Can I show him in the map where it is?
The map you just took back.
So
we have it right here.
Okay.
Sir, why don't you sit down and ask him to identify what you'd like him to identify the location of.
That's what you wanted to look at, correct?
So, yes. So, you see the yellow area where the South Hill Creek comes down? Correct? That yellow, it's the yellow area where the Sock Hill Creek is bordered by. In this. All right. Are you looking at it, or I don't understand it.
Yes, I see that. I see two yellow lines on your map that you're referring to.
Okay. You see where 84 crosses over the bridge? 84 crosses over that yellow line. The yellow area with the sock.
Crosses over in two locations.
Sorry? Crosses over
in two locations. Crosses over in two locations.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm looking at the one that is directly straight above the Sock Hill Creek.
So there's...
I'm looking at the one for the Sock Hill Creek only, right now.
Okay.
Okay? So that's the large bridge that goes over the South Hill. Right under there, under that bridge, to the immediate right, on the border of the South Hill, that's where the mining pit was. Okay?
So what do you mean by border?
It's on the shore, it's on the edge of the South Hill where the mining pit was. It's so, a big area that was, it looks like a whole dome area taken out.
Right.
And that's on the border of the South Hill, underneath the South Hill Creek, underneath the bridge of 84. Correct? Are you with me?
Why don't you tell him something on the map that he could use as a point of reference? That
I did. I showed him the
all right, we
straight up on, I'm using the yellow areas going straight up from the South Hill, so you hit the South Hill Creek Bridge of 84. So it's right under the bridge. And that's 2,800 feet away from the springs.
Objection, that's testimony again. Agreed.
Okay. Are you aware that it's 2,800 feet from the springs?
Yes.
Okay. You're aware that your site is 3,000 feet from the springs?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I'm asking you, how can that water that's on the edge of the South Hill, from there, skip over all that geography and go into the Fantine Creek, which is about, I don't know how it's in terms of the map. Well, there's a lot of stuff between there and the Vandermark Creek. So how does it go from one watershed delineated, you can see it, and then it's, you somehow make it cross over all this geography and go to the Vandermark Creek?
Are you saying Vandermark?
Vantine.
V-A-N-T-I-N-E.
We're all having trouble with that. Vantine Creek. Can you explain to me how that's possible?
Yes.
Okay.
So first of all, you use the word border. And I think that's a very good word. Because the quarry is along a border. It's shown up on the map as a topographic watershed divide between Sock Hill and the Vantine Creek. Topographic watershed divides are not always the actual watershed divides, number one. Number two, the quarry, the problem with the quarry was they were digging down, I believe it was 68 feet from the surface. Water level monitoring well in the area suggests the actual water table is maybe at 70 some feet. So they're excavating 3 to 4 feet right above the water table. Right? And as they're doing that, there's a storm event, and all this water is pouring in to right. this gravel pit.
Exactly.
So what I'm saying is that the reason how it got there, it didn't have to go up and over anything. It's down 68 feet. Now, in school we're talking, hey, no, rivers in our area don't have buried valleys, they don't flow like little rivers under the ground. Well, in the unsolid material, you can have little buried rivers under the ground, kind of, that have really fast flow. And based on bedrock elevation, mm-hmm. and based on the monitoring wells that were put in by the USGS, I'm saying that that quarry and that flow system is into the Vantine Brook watershed, not the Sock Hill. So the flow system for the quarry when they dug it is down and flowing into the Vantine Brook watershed, not the Sock Hill.
Yeah, but that's assuming that the Sock Hill Creek is not a losing creek. It is a losing creek.
I'm not
action.
Is it a losing creek or is it not a losing creek?
The Sock Hill has sections that are losing, yes.
Yes, and isn't that a section where it's losing?
Sock Hill Creek doesn't flow anywhere near the quarry.
What? It's right now.
Objection, sir. Okay. No more testimony.
Okay.
We're through the quarry.
Yes, it does. It's right. I'm showing you where
you are. Objection, Mr. DiBiase. You are testifying again. Okay. How many more questions do you have?
So, you do not agree that the quarry was on the edge of the South Hill Creek underneath the South Hill Bridge? That's not where it was?
That's not what I'm saying.
What are you saying?
I'm saying that you characterize the quarry as being on the border. And I agree. It's on the border between the Saco Creek watershed and the Vantine Brook watershed. Even though it might be topographically located in what's been delineated as the Sawkill watershed, the flow system for that quarry and those unconsolidated deposits flow from there into Vantine Creek Brook, which then impacts the springs. And it flows through the gravelly deposit that you were excavating into. That's how the information I have between the study that was written, the water elevation from the USGS, the bedrock contour map suggests that's the flow system.
So because of this confusion between our side and your side, don't you think we need an aquifer study then?
Okay, I think we've gone through this in pretty good detail. Let's move it along to the next subject of your examination, please.
Thank you.
When you made the statement in 105, 1 and 2, you said the bromide tracer data really doesn't show a breakthrough analysis or a curve. What do you mean by breakthrough analysis? If you were doing the tracer study, how would you do it? Would you do it any differently than he did it, than Gideon submitted?
Please let him answer the questions. Okay. So, ask three questions and not let him answer a single one.
So the first part of that is the methodology is actually not in the documents that we have. So I can't say how we did it, how we would do it differently. All I can say is that the data that's presented does not show a breakthrough of bromide. It just doesn't. It shows what appears to be a natural variation in the bromide level for the springs. Doesn't show like a breakthrough.
So you're contending that what they saw in the springs was not the trace of it?
Right. Correct. It was a natural level of bromide in the water.
Say again, it was a
natural level of bromide in the water.
So there was not a spike, there was no color, was there color in it?
No. The witness is sitting there.
Does the color? I don't know, because yes, doesn't these things have color?
The report doesn't mention any kind of dye that was used to color. It mentions using a bromide tracer study where you test for the level of bromide.
It does say that in the source water protection plan that they used a dye tracer test.
For the gravel quarry.
For something, yes.
And I agree with, so let me back up. I agree the gravel quarry shows that what they did there affected your spring.
Yeah.
Where I disagree is the path.
Okay.
I'm saying the path was not from the quarry into the Sawkill into your springs. I'm saying the path is from the quarry to the Vantine Brook to your springs.
And how can you be so certain about that?
That's based on the other data. The monitoring wells constructed by USGS the monitoring wells that were constructed by the U.S. Geological Survey that were done after that study was done, looking at the bedrock contour map that we prepared, showing what appears to be buried valley structures.
Buried,
B-U-R-I-E-D. That's how I make that conclusion.
So can you make that same conclusion then? That your site doesn't follow a path through the Sawkill down to the springs. Well, it could go. Can it go?
Stop. Let him answer that question, please.
I never said that the water from our site doesn't flow down to Saco Creek. I said that a portion of the site flows to the south and discharges into the Sawkill downgrading the springs.
Yeah.
And then I said the eastern portion of the site, I didn't characterize how big other than about half, flows through the Sawkill Creek.
Okay.
I agree with that.
Okay, good.
What I don't agree with is that there's a connection proven between the Sawkill Creek and your springs.
Not with any of the studies that were done, not any of the tracer studies.
1960 study, 68 study doesn't show it. The oxygen study shows a weak connection, and...
Let him finish.
Well, we know this.
Let him finish.
And the bromide study doesn't show that there was a breakthrough.
Okay. Can you go back to the Penn State study?
Sure.
You don't have a date on that, correct?
The Penn State study, we have the data in there and their conclusions.
Yeah, what's the date?
There is no date on that report.
How can that be acceptable?
There's no date on it?
That was the reference provided in your source water protection plan, the study from Penn State using oxygen. So I used the document that's in your source water protection plan and requested it. So I assumed it's valid because it's in your source water protection plan. Also, I know Brian Diwali. They were a professor I know Dr. Diwali was one of my professors, and I know Brian Switzdock from his work at Penn State. So I trust both of those people.
So are you going to still stick with your statement made in 103 then, that the Sawkill Creek contributes little to no water to the Milford Springs?
Yes, and that's a conclusion that is a cross platform. And what I mean by a cross platform is a conclusion of the 68 study. It's inclusion of the Penn State study. Both of them have that same conclusion.
Do you know that there are other studies that were done on the Sawkill Creek?
I requested all the studies. I requested the data from the water authority for the project that was cited in the source water.
So when I do my presentation, I will present in evidence the Sawkill Creek, Vandermark Creek Watershed and Rivers Conservation Plan.
Can you repeat?
It's the Sawkill Creek, Vandermark Creek Watershed Rivers Conservation Plan that was done in 2005. Are you aware of this study?
No.
It's done by Princeton Hydro. So would you, if it's done by Princeton Hydro, would you?
I don't know who the author was, but I've worked with Princeton Hydro in the past, and I found
would you agree with their conclusions?
That's not in the record.
I know.
Well, if you know, then don't ask about it. Let's move on. We're running out of time. You need to complete your cross-examination so we can allow the board to ask questions and then any redirect. We only have about 20 minutes left.
Okay, I'm almost done.
May I ask this, Snarter, did you get the name of the report? To what extent that you'll be able to reproduce it?
Yes. If he wants to read it again, that would be great.
And slowly, please.
Can you read the name of that report again, please?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. It's called the Sawkill Creek Watershed Creek Watershed.
Slow down. Slow down.
Sorry. The Sawkill Creek. See, this says anymore.
Just please say the name of the report.
It says the Sawkill Creek and Vandermark Creek Watershed Rivers Conservation Plan.
What conservation plan?
Rivers Conservation Plan, sorry. Of March of 2005. So there are other studies out there. I'm just trying to show you that there might be other competing evidence.
Right, that's not a question.
Yes. Okay. All right, are you about done?
Almost.
Okay, let's move along. No more statements, or we're going to have to end your cross-examination and move along.
So when you say that there's that unconfined area between the top layer and the aquifer below, you call that a consolidated area, unconsolidated area, correct?
I'll be honest, I'm confused on what you're asking me.
What document is that from?
Okay. He mentioned it many times.
Could you tell him what he mentioned so he can answer the question?
I'm trying.
Let's start with that. Let's start
with the reference. DeVito, the reference that you're using. What is it? Where did it come from?
Listen after that. Let's just go to what he said, all right? You have talked tonight about that layer between the top of the surface and before you get to the aquifer, what are you calling that layer?
That layer can be called the vadostone, V-A-D-O-S-E.
Okay, do you know how wide that is on your site, on that site? Or can you give me an estimate of what feet that could be?
We think, based on the available data and shown in the map, that the thickness of the unconsolidated material can be up to 200 feet thick. We also think that, I believe that we think the unconsolidated material could be up to, I believe, 68 to 70 feet thick.
Okay. And then when does the aquifer begin? How deep is it? When do you get to
the... So the easiest way to say that...
The unconfined aquifer, I'm talking
about. The easiest way to use your reference is for your quarry. So in your quarry, they were 68 feet down, and a few feet down was the water table.
Okay.
So 70 plus feet.
Yeah, that's about right from your site. Because okay, it's in your report. You say it's 65 feet.
All right. You cannot continue to testify. I need you to wrap up your questions so we can conclude tonight's hearing.
So the question is, then how deep is the aquifer? When does that start? What is the footage?
Well, then if
oh, you said 65 feet.
So it would vary. So in some places it could be, if in fact the aquifer thickness is 200 feet, then if we have a saturated condition that starts at 75, then it goes from 75 to 200 feet. If we have other places where the elevation is about the same and the thickness to that bedrock is what's shown on some of our contour maps, we'll have less. So it varies. It's not one number.
Okay, so in your testimony here on 13, 12, and 13, it says how far below the surface is the top of the aquifer? And you said in your answer, not 100% sure.
What page are you on?
I'm on 113, 12, 13, and 14. The question was how far below the surface is the top of the aquifer, which I just asked. And the location and where, you know, because where you're going to put your well. Not 100% sure is what you said, right? And then it says, I need that specific on-site data. So where are you going to get that specific on-site data?
So the reason why I said 100% sure, because that was the demand.
That was what?
That was the demand and understanding of the question. When I was asked a question by the lawyer, for that, he didn't want, hey, I think it's about, like I did just
show you. Oh, okay.
He wanted a specific number. So I can't answer that question. So my answer was, I'm not 100% sure.
So probably the most important question is, as a geologist, okay, what is an unconfined aquifer? Can you describe to the audience and to the board what an unconfined aquifer is?
Sure. So the easiest thing to do is take a tube. At the bottom of the tube, put a cap, pour sand in it, all the way and fill the tube all the way up with sand, pour water in the tube halfway, the portion of the tube where the sand is wet, aquifer. From where it's moist to dry, vadostone.
Right.
Cap, rock.
Okay. Didn't you just describe that location that we're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
In part.
So what are the sensitivities of an unconfined aquifer in terms of pollution?
Sure. Unconfined aquifers are vulnerable to surface activity.
Say that again.
They're vulnerable to surface activity.
Like.
Next one could be quarry operation where we have disturbance, spills, anything of that nature. Drilling sometimes.
So is it your opinion that when they dig those channels for the filtration systems, that they're not going to be digging too close to the aquifer or digging in, what do you call that layer?
Well, they're going to be digging in the veto zone.
Yeah, they are, right?
No matter what.
No matter what.
But it's dry sand.
And if you dig too deep, what happens?
Well,
as
you can
stand from, okay.
So again, that's, we can't dig too deep. So we can't dig right into or too close to the water table.
But you don't know exactly where the water table is, you said. So how do you know how deep to dig?
Again, so my role here is to inform the real estate company and the board what information is available about the site. And we look at the published data for the site, and in this case, we did recommend that when they do certain site characterization be done, and in particular, characterization be done, that would include installing monitoring wells to see where and how thick the aquifer is, and getting water quality information about the aquifer.
But do you understand the community's concerns that because you're putting this on top of an unconfined aquifer, that any kind of filtration system that they put in, and you already stated that you said that the petrochemicals are a big problem, correct? Going into an unconfined aquifer.
Correct.
So what if the filtration systems fail, or what if they're not up to the job, or what if they get a rainfall like we've been getting in Florida, like we're getting 10 inches, 7 inches now. What would happen if you get 7 to 10 inches of rain on with the building there and with all the trucks and all the runoff? What do you think could happen? Where is that water going to go?
That water is going to have first of all, the stormwater design is on the engineer. It's on the project engineer.
Uh-huh.
So how those facilities are designed, they have to be designed to meet DEP requirements. And with respect, where's the water going to go? That we're going to recharge the two-year storm, for sure. I would imagine it's probably going to recharge more than a two-year storm off the primary site. So where's the water going to go? It's going to be recharged back into the site like it's being recharged now.
Okay, you just said two-year storm. Can you explain that to the people?
This is way beyond the scope of direct attention.
Yeah. I'm going to agree. Can we wrap it up now?
Sure, I'm done.
Okay. All right, any questions from the board?
Yes. Mr. Orme?
Yes.
How many monitoring wells would you recommend, and where would those go?
I believe there was a monitoring well plan put together for the project. I don't remember the numbers, the specifics. And also, that's a dynamic, as more information, you know, is compiled for the project. So that you know, I don't want to reference other work that was just done. But I don't know if that monitoring plan has been submitted in the record already.
Okay. What would differentiate between less or more monitoring wells in the data that you're collecting?
So what I think that the best thing is to understand what we need to characterize. We need to characterize how the flow leaves the project site. How does the water move in the unsolid material on the western portion and eastern portion of the project site, so we can understand how it moves subsurfacely. That's going to require to install monitoring wells, and likely require the installation of what are called nested wells to look for a vertical flow movement. So not just horizontal movement. The other aspects of that is collecting samples of the materials so that we could either estimate the permeability or field measure that permeability, so we can understand how fast things move, so that when a stormwater basin is proposed, we now have the aquifer parameters to understand what's going to happen to that water as it recharges and where it's going to go.
So those monitoring wells would be introduced potentially after this process is concluded, but before the land development application is completed?
Yes, because the other aspect of those monitoring wells is I still have to prove everything I just said. And everything I've said during, I have to prove that. I have to prove that the western flows through here and how much. I have to prove the eastern flows this way and how much. I have to prove those things because I can't adversely affect my client's well that we're trying to build, and I can't adversely affect the neighbors and therefore the springs. So I have to prove all those things.
Over what period of time would the monitoring take place before you would feel you had adequate data to be able to conclude that portion of this study?
I think all we would need to do is look at a very short window, you know, a non-storm event, storm event, to understand the variation. Because what can happen during storm events is the stream itself, because it is a losing stream, could affect the head. Or, right, the stream loses water and has to go somewhere. Where does it go? It goes into the bank, the dry Lido zone. So we would have to at least look at that type of monitoring. So probably something like over, you say 2 quarters.
So it would be like a 6 month period that you would be monitoring,
yeah.
Roughly. And would it have to be a 6 month period when the ground is not particularly frozen?
Well, the preference would be probably to try to not do it when it's frozen, because frozen conditions can screw up head measurements.
What happens to the monitoring wells after the project is fully constructed?
That would depend on requirements. So that would depend on requirements. DEP has a tendency to want to get rid of stuff that could act as like conduits for contamination. On the other hand, you know, I like wells. They tell a lot of stuff, and they're useful for things. So maybe some of them need to stay.
Okay. Well, would those be in the unconsolidated material, the consolidated material, or both?
My guess is there'd be a lot more in the Vado zone, in the upper.
Saying Vado zone.
Yeah. So. V-A-D-O-S-E.
Vados.
So it's kind of like the dry area, the dry soil above where the water table is. We would probably have something there, and we would have probably something, at least monitoring wells within the unconsolidated aquifer itself, because the unconsolidated aquifer is not homogeneous. It's not uniform. It varies. So likely during the drilling, we're going to find pockets of gravelly material, so we're going to want to have some type of nest to characterize those different materials, because they're going to contribute how the flow moves and how water moves and how contaminants might move. And my guess is we probably won't have a lot of consolidated monitoring wells, just because of, you know, we would probably have we have 3 old wells on the project site that we could potentially refurbish. I don't know how deep they go yet. Potentially refurbish those. And then at least 1 new well with respect to the production well that we could use to characterize the site.
If that 2-quarter period in which you're doing studies happens to be a drought period, would that skew the results?
It could, but I mean, in some respects, that's kind of good. It would be kind of good to see that when things like that are occurring, because that's likely when we have less effect of this stream losing, and we have more likely a faster velocity headed towards the springs and Sawtill Creek.
How do you reconcile your concerns for the petrochemical contamination of your well from surface water with the use that introduces consistent and significant volume of tractor trailers?
I'm not an engineer, and so they designed, my understanding is they have water quality inlets and other treatment things that should be installed prior to the infiltration systems, and you can also add things to the infiltration systems in terms of forebays or other structures that help remove that contaminant.
So engineering structures would address that concern?
You're saying forebays?
Forebays, it's like an entry area, F-O-R-E-B-A-Y.
Thank you.
You indicated that the excavation for this project would not have the same effect as the excavation for the quarry because of the depth. How deep would the excavation for this project be?
So I believe the deepest excavation for the project site is on the western portion is 20 feet. And then as we approach the eastern portion of the site, which is more likely within the Sock Hill, it's a fill. It's not an excavation. I think the fill is about 15 feet.
Mr. Gable, when he gets here, as gets to the stand, will be giving him that information in more detail.
Fantastic. There are other wells closer to the site than the Milford Springs. Will they be affected by the activity on the site under any conditions, in your opinion?
No, I'm going to have to, as part of the assessment, as I mentioned before, part of my assessment isn't just looking at stormwater, it's also the sewage system. And so we're going to have to reach out to the neighbors and ask them permission to measure water level in their well and water quality now, you know, see what they have, if they have any pretreatment systems, et cetera. And I can't knowingly propose a system that causes a problem. You can't get that approved.
Why doesn't 84 present a well risk for your proposed well location with its proximity? Because I noticed that the new location for the well seems to have much stronger proximity to 84 than the old one.
Well, so one of the problems with my job is I don't get to put things where I want. I'm stuck with putting things where DEP guidance says I got to be this far away from this and this far away from this, and so that's what I'm stuck with. That's my honest answer. I agree. I think 84 is a risk. I'm going to have to worry about constructing that well, and that's why I want to target that well into the deeper Trimmer's rock formation and go into that rock formation to completely separate it from the unconsolidated aquifer and what's vulnerable to contamination. I'm hoping that what's actually going on there is in the Trimmer's is losing water up into the unconsolidated material, so that there's a head going up into the well and not down, so that I'm not part of that potential impact area. So again, I wish I had your options that you gave me, but I don't. They won't let me put it towards the front because of the activities along the front. I can't put it near where the septic system is because of that.
I'm just asking you what the risk is, sir. I'm not suggesting that it be in a particular location. And the site is rather large. I think it's the design that would be impacting you more so than you know, just this one. There's a lot of room there, but you have a very large building you're putting on site. So you have to reconcile the two.
Right, and it's not the building per se, it's the infiltration units. I have to be 100 feet away from all the infiltration units on the project site. Also,
you indicated that there would be additional studies that would be required potentially after these conditional use approvals. Can you indicate what those would be and what could be identified there that would preclude moving forward, in your opinion? Is there anything that would preclude moving forward that you could find when you do that?
I think those additional studies are part of the conditional use approval.
Okay, so they're
conditions of the approval.
I understand what you're saying, but what I'm saying is, let's say we get to the end of this process and theoretically, you have conditions to do those studies prior to moving forward with the land development. What kinds of studies would those be?
Well, the first one would be the monitoring plan that we proposed, and then we would have to go through the process of formally going through the process with DEP and the local agency to get the sewage system approved. There might be some additional hydro studies related to that. And then finally, we have a well to approve that's going to require a pre-drilling plan, actually drilling the well, doing an assessment to see what that produces, and looking at how that withdrawal impacts other wells and potentially the consolidated aquifer.
When you do those studies, is there anything that could be identified that you feel would hold?
Sure. I mean, if we drill a well and don't get enough water, that would hold.